Warning, ProTri News is a podcast with different opinions, knowledge and possibly fake news about triathlon racing. This is not for the faint of heart. If you get offended or hurt by what is said, please stop listening and go listen to some uplifting meditation music or just go work out, then try again.
I started using the Magic 5 goggles back in 2021. For the last decade, I struggled to find a pair of goggles that didn't leak or fog up during a workout. When you're like me and wear contacts, having goggles that leak simply won't cut it. The Magic 5 has solved this and my goggle leakage problem with their easy-to-use 3-step face scan that optimally fits your goggles to your face. What does Jan Frodeno, Ben Canute, Daniel Backegaard, Lauren Brannon, and Vanilla Language all have in common? Besides being the best swimmers in the sport, they also use Magic 5. Visit themagic5.com/PTN and get your goggles today. This is affiliate code, not a discount code, because each pair of goggles that you buy helps support us, ProTri News, to keep this show going. Thank you and enjoy the show. Hello and welcome back to another episode of ProTri News. Bonjour, bonsoir. We're still in France. I've had a great time. I'm very excited that all five of us are hopping on a call to talk about the racing that happened this weekend.
Can I go first? No. Right. I got to start. Because you guys understood and you were in much better time zones, this weekend's racing could not have been at worse times for the U.S. time zone. And you guys probably just didn't understand that not being there. But every race was on at midnight or 1 a.m. for me, and it was just it was really tough. So I've been getting caught up, but I will just say it was rough for U.S. viewers this weekend.
Yeah, it's actually nice being in Europe. Like, now I understand why Mark lives over here, because it's just like the time zone is so great for everything to watch.
This weekend?
Yeah.
Kona and that stuff.
Yeah, every weekend, maybe not.
Yeah.
Who's opening chips? Who's got the wrapper?
I'm enjoying my French chocolate. Sorry. My apologies.
So cheap as well, right?
Yeah, so cheap. Yeah. All right. Mark, how was your weekend? Did you enjoy the races?
Oh, God, we're live.
Yeah.
I've just come back into the room after pouring a drink. I didn't know we were live. I really enjoyed the two test event races and actually enjoyed the relay as well. Quite liked the triathlon relay, weirdly. That was good. But everything's good, mate. Yeah.
Chelsea, did you like the duathlon relay?
You know, I don't love a duathlon, but it was, I think we made lemonade out of lemons and really got behind it. It was really fun to watch, and it helped that there was a unpredictable, dramatic finish. We bet some wagers. You beat me, so I was out a few dollars. But yeah, really fun week here in Paris. We're all a bit tired, but excited to debrief on the last few days.
So before the race, Chelsea, Talbot, and I, we had a three-way bet going. Talbot bet GB would win the relay. Chelsea bet France would win the relay, and I bet Germany would win the relay.
Because on the show last week, you mocked me for suggesting GB would win. And then you watched them both win the individuals, and Talbot changed his mind.
But they didn't win the relay still.
So close. Lindemann was great.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is true, but I did hear that Beth Potter had a mechanical problem on the bike. Someone messaged us that, but I don't know if that was actually true or not.
I would believe that. She was riding a super high cadence. So maybe, I don't know if she always does, but that did look really high. I didn't make the link at the time. Maybe that's something to do with it.
Tough. Yeah, no, Talbot, have you enjoyed your time in France?
I'm on day 10 now in Europe, and I'm loving every bit of it. It is definitely different than America, especially the food. But here for two more days, I meet Christian and Gustav tomorrow, and then we fly over to Finland. So, loving every bit.
It's mad they're flying back tomorrow.
I mean, it's insane. Insane.
That's mental. All right. Well, let's get started with the show. We have the Paris test event this weekend that we've been at. It was a very exciting race. I mean, I haven't been to a WTCS race in a long time, even though this isn't technically, I guess, a WTCS race. But Thursday, the women raced. The swim, I guess they went under like the wrong bridge or something. Chelsea, do you want to run us through the women's race?
Yeah. So Thursday morning, the women raced. It was a unique swim. So in the scene, is that how you pronounce it? I don't even know. This river that has gotten a lot of attention for the water quality. Turned out they were able to swim. Their levels, they reported, were safe enough. And it's got a bit of a current. So usually when these races start, the best ranked athletes with the first choice of pontoon position, they'll select the outside spots because you just get hit less. It's a way cleaner line usually. But for the first time I think I've ever seen everyone went in the middle. Everyone except Taylor Nibb, who always wants to do something different. But all those top-ranked athletes went in the middle because if you know anything about rivers, the current is stronger in the middle and it would be weaker near the outside. But it's a 1,000-meter first lap and then about a 500-meter second lap. So as soon as you get to that turnaround at the far end, you're actually continuing to be pushed out. So you kind of have to swim almost backwards as you're making your way around what's a pretty tight buoy turn, and then you're swimming upstream into the current. So we saw in the women's race, they really hugged the wall. I think Cassandra Beaugrand was like way up against the wall. So it was just kind of a crazy swim to watch. Taylor Nibb dove in the second lap. She actually got out well, dove in the second lap in the mix, and then lost like 30 seconds in that second lap just because she didn't take a great line. So generally, the swim is more or less predictable. Those faster swimmers go on the outside and get their position. But I think that we saw that for the Olympics, the swim is definitely going to require some strategy and just some attention to these details that they don't usually have to consider. But it turned out that we thought there might be a bit of a breakaway. There was like three main groups that came out of the water. Taylor Nibb was driving that third. Katie Zafiris and Beth Potter were driving the second, and they were all one big group of about 25, maybe two laps in. And excellent bike course, but we can talk about this, I guess, later. Something that I've talked to some people about, really wide, not terribly technical. I think the technical element was the cobblestones, but it did seem like kind of a soft ride. Definitely a breakaway didn't really go. I don't know how much horsepower was coming from the girls, maybe trying to initiate a breakaway, but it was a foot race and a battle of Beth Potter, Cassandra Beaugrand. And I think Beth Potter just laid down a really epic run, and she was our Paris Test Event winner. Laura Lindemann was on the podium for third. She ran really well, and she had a really good relay today too. So was that a good recap?
Perfect recap.
Oh, thanks.
I think Talbot was the happiest person to see Beth Potter win, then Beth, which was good.
I mean, I was really excited. I was a Beth Potter fan for a couple of years now, but I mean, at the end of the day, it was fantastic racing. It was unfortunate to see Nibb make so many. I mean, we were very critical of her riding at the front of the group and pulling everyone around Paris all day. But then after talking with her, she said that she tried to ride off the front multiple times, but the course is so narrow that there's nowhere that you can like stand up and surge. Like there's nowhere that the bike that you can break away. And then I kind of thought that was BS that she was saying that. And then I watched the men's race and I watched Hayden Wild try to do the same thing. And it's just, you can't really get away on this course. It is true.
You know, look, so I brought this up before the race. I mean, I said, because people were asking me, and I said, guys, we get a demonstration of how this course is raced every single year. Granted, it's at the end of a 21-day stage race, but there's a reason. There's multiple reasons, but the biggest one is speed. There's a reason that there's no breakaway on the final day at the Tour de France. And these big courses that do allow for some momentum, you know, they are very challenging to get away on because the group just naturally rolls very fast. So if you're rolling along the road at 48, 49 K an hour, your ability to ride 53 K an hour and stay away is quite challenging. So yeah, a breakaway on this course is going to be dictated more likely by the swim. But as I spoke with Kyle and Talbot over the weekend, the swim, because you go, we'll call it tailwind first and then headwind second, it's gonna bunch up in the headwind on the swim too. So I think, truth be told, I think if they reverse the direction of the swim, that has a much greater impact than trying to manipulate the bike course.
That's interesting. I think the only technical element too was this 180, which I guess sometimes can be used as like an opportunity to at least drop some people off the back, but it was on the roughest bit of road. It was not only cobble, but it was like torn up in other ways. So they were all just really kind of going slowly around so this 180. So there was just nothing happening.
So everyone that just then creates everyone to go donkey slow around that corner, and that doesn't ever create a point of difference, which U-turns typically won't create. We have, you know, some U-turn excitement today in Singapore at the Asian Open. But yeah, those normally negate most of the racing. They just shed a few people from the back, but never from the front end.
And one more thing about both races that was quite interesting, that it's hard to say too, though, because we could see a completely different race in Paris. But an interesting note on both races is the strongest cyclist, both of them, missed the front swim pack. So you had Taylor Nib literally pull almost and ride through every single female and pull them all up to the front. And it was the same in the men's as well. Christian had a god-awful swim and just pulled every single person up to the front group. So let's just say if Christian made that front group, I think you would have seen different bike packs in the men's race and additional with Taylor as well in the female race. So,
yeah, I was actually watching. So Flora was here just kind of spectating, and I got to watch the race with her. And I mean, of course, she thinks the race would have gone a different way if she was in it. But it was interesting to just kind of chat with her and say, would the addition of Taylor Nib to that front group from the get-go and maybe a Flora in a race, maybe another person really just driving? There didn't seem to be anyone from the beginning driving. Of course, we could run the race 100 times and you never really know. But I think that, yeah, just having people at the front, like the breakaway is only really gonna stick in this kind of thing if you're going right out of the swim, and for that to happen it has to be the people that are swimming fast. So we'll see what happens in a year, but definitely a big run race for both the men and the women this week in Paris.
And something to note with Cassandra, I think everyone, even on our show, but not only on our show but on the fantasy try, Cassandra was running so hot earlier in the year. And it's just interesting. You gotta wonder if their federation's just kind of like scratching their heads. I know that we mentioned that all French athletes had to come down 21 days or whatever it was out. Like Cassandra just did not, 10 days out, my apologies. It did not look like that she was the Cassandra, the dominating Cassandra we saw earlier this year. So, yeah.
And this is like a very high pressure race for a lot of these people. I mean, to kind of arrive to this event, which is the pinnacle of 2023 for most of them, and just stay cool and execute your best race. It's easy on paper, but when you kind of get into it, it's like there's so much going on. I mean, racing in front of a home crowd and the stress and the buildup of it, I think that we definitely as outsiders don't quite realize everything that goes into that. And those people that can really just prepare for these big races and perform on those one day under pressure events are really just like a class above. So hats off to someone like Alex Yee, who just absolutely nailed it on Friday. And it was just, yeah, you could tell he was there. And who knows, maybe Cassandra learned a bunch from this and she'll be back in a year with some lessons and some improvements. But
Chelsea, yeah. Could you help walk us through the top eight, but give the listeners some context of, there was some confusion because every federation has a different criteria. So do you know off the top of your head? I think we know Beth Potter, she won the race, but that does not auto qualify her, correct?
That's correct. So her criteria for British Triathlon, she will now have to, because she podiumed here, if she also podiums at Pontevedra, that will get her a British Triathlon auto qual. Also, someone, Cassandra Beaugrand, needed a test event here. So that was provisional qualification for her, but she has to go confirm it with a top six at a World Series in 24. The Germans, who were third, sixth, and ninth, so the third and the sixth place Germans qualified, that was Laura Lindemann and Nina Eim, by getting a top eight. And then Taylor Nib, who was fifth, earned an auto for Team USA. There was potentially two spots available for them, but had Nib got third and had Taylor Spivey, who was the second athlete, but at the top eight, they would both qualify. That didn't happen. So only Taylor Knibb qualified. Other athletes in that top eight were Lombardi.
Emma Lombardi and Fort. Yep.
Yep. Yep.
And
so that wasn't
and those,
enough for her.
For neither, for the head, it was top three was your first step. So essentially, and I apologize. Were there World Series points at this race, or was this just Olympic points?
Yep. There were World Triathlon Series, and it actually counted as one of the scores for the grand final, which they haven't always done. So that was great. They did that. We, I know, talked about this on Instagram a lot. They did offer World Cup prize money, which was more than they offered in Tokyo. Was it zero prize money? Or sorry, no, Rio was zero prize money.
Rio was zero prize money, zero points.
0 points. Tokyo, I believe, they offered World Series prize money. So, yeah. I mean, World Triathlon had to come up with those dollars. So they were able to provide a World Cup payout. Not a huge amount of money. I think 15th place gets $150, which seemed outrageous to a lot of people, but that's the reality of what they're able to provide, I guess. So,
yeah, and World Triathlon, they went into like reserve account to put up that money because I don't think that Paris put up the money for that just because it's part of the test event or whatever. And so usually it's the venues that provide the prize money, to my understanding.
Yes, usually the city puts up, the host city puts up that prize money. So, I mean, but hats off to Paris. This was the most stunning venue course. I think people were just blown away when they got here and they saw how, I mean, it was an epic course.
Yeah. I mean, riding on the cobblestones and then you go out to the area whenever you can go and see everyone and they're riding up Champs-Élysées, like, I've never been to Paris before, and I, like, had goosebumps because of how, like, iconic the venue was. Like, outside of transition, you could just see the Eiffel Tower. Like, it was stunning. Like, next year, I mean, the TV coverage from NBC will be absolutely insane if you're, like, in the U.S. I'm sure it'll be insane from BBC as well. Notes that we're getting from the Triathlon Live coverage is there was times that they would focus a lot more on the architecture and the buildings than the actual racing itself.
Yeah, there was a little bit of that, but not too much. Like, you have to do a bit of that. That's why the cities host these events. If you don't pan out and show some of the city and why you're doing it, why is the city going to put up the prize money for future races or the infrastructure to host them? Like,
yeah,
like, take a breath.
Yeah,
enjoy looking at the Louvre, and it's only a few seconds.
Speaking of the Louvre, we got back from there today. It was epic.
Two other notes about the race to hit back. I could be off a little bit on these times, but I believe that we were told that the females, when they dove into the water, they swam down to the first buoy. They swam at 43 seconds per 100 meter pace. And when they turned around, it was 137 pace per 100 meters. So that shows you how fast that river is flowing. Another interesting note that Flora is actually the one who pointed it out and mentioned to us. Taylor Knibb was with that front group and tried to go around to the left on the way back, and she went in like further away from the wall, so more into the current, and that's when she completely lost that group. So it's interesting to see how much dynamics and positioning play a role in this race. It's just like, a lot of the federations will take back a lot of notes and be doing a lot of recapping heading into next year's games. But another big surprise on this was Taylor Knibb, third fastest run split of the day, which I think was shocking to everyone. I mean, she was like a woman on a mission coming off that bike and the last of her entire group after she pulled everyone through Paris.
I have a question.
Say she had an abominable T2. Like, she was fifth on the day, but had she, you know, come off in the mix, she would have been third. So
easily,
take back to the drawing board with transition there. But yeah, she was running really well. It was impressive.
Is the river always going to run like this? Are these pretty predictable conditions? And is this always going to be, obviously we talk about tides. It's a lot in ocean swims, but was the river, did you guys hear, are they like the height levels of it or the way that it's the speed that it's running at the current? Is that something that's always going to exist, or could it be very different conditions next year? Okay, nobody knows.
We really failed on river research.
All right, final question. I mean, are we going to address the elephant in the room that somehow the water quality was okay for the individual races, but for para and the mixed team relay, it magically got worse, even though, you know, it didn't rain? Like, what are we... And I think the reality for us could this be a duathlon next year?
There's a lot. I mean, they got 11 months to sort this out. I don't think that there's any possible way that this will be a duathlon next year. It has been so unbelievably hot. Like Friday and Saturday, it was so freaking hot. Or like, I guess, yeah, it was Friday midday. It was so hot and it like cooked the water from my point of view. And then also they like monitor stuff that comes from, I mean, miles or kilometers away from the river, and something that could happen way far upstream affects the stuff that happens like in the city. So they've done a lot of stuff and a lot of research to get this kind of taken care of to where they can actually track this. But I don't think in any way 11 months from now, they won't have this sorted out to have a swim.
Cool.
Yeah. I agree.
It's going to be a triathlon. I'm just saying, I think it was, I don't know.
But even talking to the athletes, like none of them are sick or anything like that. So, I mean, it gives the allure that the weather was fine Thursday and Friday. Chelsea, Talbot?
Yeah, I was going to say I'm listening to hear if anyone has been sick. I'm curious as well. I haven't really heard anything, but the E. coli numbers, I think, are the ones of concern. And as I've been told, that's a 3 to 14 day incubation period kind of sickness. So it could be something we see over the next week with people, which would be unfortunate. But yeah, I think like Kyle said, I'm 99% sure there will be a swim next year. They're doing everything they can. And I think that for them to have gotten 2 out of the 4 days in the river, I think it felt like a success, and very unfortunate for para and the relay today. But yeah, trial run test event.
And just to update everyone, in 2021, they announced a plan to make the river where it's swimmable. So they're actually, it was really cool, actually, in the athlete meeting, a lady from the city went up and said that a lot of these Olympics go to cities and they build venues that are never used again. And something that's really cool about what triathlon is doing is they've been able to go to the city, invest millions and millions, or I believe over maybe $1 billion in rerouting the water and making it to where even after the games, there's going to be public swimming areas in the river for the children of the city and all that. So even in front of our hotel right here, there's all the sewer lines are ripped up. It's freaking crazy construction. And it's like that throughout the entire city. And I believe that every day they take a step forward on getting the water cleaner. So I believe 100% we're going to see a triathlon next year. Let's move on to the men's race.
Men's race was really fun. Who wants to take it? Chelsea again?
Okay. Yeah. So I genuinely thought there'd be a breakaway in both races. I was wrong. I think I don't know enough about wide bike courses, but I guess I'm learning. But I kind of was expecting Vincent Louis, who we hadn't seen in a while, to swim really fast and drive a front group to get away in that first lap. My friend was actually standing down in the pontoon as they came out of the first lap, and he said he could hear Vince yelling. I think he was like first or second out of the water. He was yelling faster, faster, faster to the guys, I think really trying to get them to drive that swim. And as Pat mentioned, the fast current into slow current, clearly that, I think, does have an effect and maybe hurts their ability to drop some people, but it was a big group really quickly. I mean, women's group was 25, men's group was like 50 guys. It looked terrifying and kind of miserable. I think that when you see them riding 9 across, just terror in their faces is every corner is the main goal is just don't go down, don't crash. So it was a run race. I think Hayden Wild, very unfortunately, on his way to the course, we reported on this, he took a fall. It was pitch black when they had to ride there, and he went down and I think busted up his hip a little bit too badly. So I think it would have been great to see him take on Alex, but I don't really think he would have even been able to challenge him. Alex ran away from everyone. Great sprint finish, though, for that second, third, fourth, fifth spot. The Frenchmen were third, fourth, and fifth. And as I said, with the women, a third, second, a podium, basically, would have guaranteed them, or at least put them on the path to automatic selection. So the only one to get on there yesterday was Dorian Konix. Vasco Velasa, who is really coming into his own as a very solid, like always there kind of guy. He outsprinted Dorian for second, and Pierre Lacour was fourth, and Leo Berger was fifth. So a very solid day for the French, but only Dorian was able to snag that first auto selection criteria. And Morgan Pearson, our beloved American, rolled onto the start list literally one day before got his Olympic spot, sixth place. Really cool to see him do that. So.
And I'm incredibly disappointed in myself because I did a bike race with Morgan Pearson, I think 3 weeks ago, and there were 100 people in the race. And I'm not exaggerating when I tell you that Morgan Pearson was the strongest cyclist in a Pro 1-2 race in just outside of Boulder. And, you know, his tactics were not present, but his strength was incredibly insane. And so I'm really disappointed in myself that I wasn't more vocal of how fit he was and how ready he was, but clearly he knew that and he showed up, and Morgan has had a very, very challenging year. So for him to roll on the night before, punch his ticket to Paris, I could not be more happy for him. And these are the stories that are the Olympic dream, and it makes it cool. And this is why we watch it, and hats off to him.
Are there auto qualifiers? First place, Alex?
I think the most interesting.
Yeah, Alex Yee, he's qualified because he's a returning medalist. Yep. So his only necessary thing he had to do was podium just this because he medaled in Tokyo. So he has punched his Paris ticket. Unsurprisingly, he will represent GB.
Yeah. And then good eighth place for Miguel Hidalgo from Brazil. He's had a great year. Tim Hellweg got his slot for Germany with his seventh place. And then...
What happens to KB? Returning Olympic gold medalist.
Isn't it just crazy, though, that you can go to a PTO race the week before, or what, 2 weeks before, and you see KB with Aaron Royal, Jan Frodeno, Mark Drubik, and all that, and the guy can't even make the last, or hardly makes the last pack in a WTCS race?
It's crazy, the dynamic, right, where there is this front-end horsepower. Back up. Did Christian Blumenfeld, is he going to be named to the team? So he went to this race purely to just rehearse the course. Is it safe to assume that?
He technically has a criteria. He told us his criteria. I am blanking on it now. Do you remember?
But he's met it.
All they do is they select the two highest.
No, he is not
in the summer.
You select,
they select
next year,
the
right?
Two highest ranked Norwegian athletes. Yeah.
Okay, so the stakes weren't as high for him at this event, and I don't know. We're going to move into this, his result in
I just wanted to ask it because it sets the conditions for the standard of the race, the PTO race.
Yes.
For me. Like, you come ninth here, you get dropped in the swim group, you fly overnight, 17 hours, 6 hour time difference. You get off a plane and you're able to win a race there. To me, it says more about the standard of the PTO race than anything else.
Yeah, yeah, very well said, Mark. If
I'm Christian though, and you're his only coach now, Olaf. I mean, this is a runner's race. This is a runner's course, and Christian is going to outrun Alex Yee and Hayden Wild, who could literally run at the Diamond League level.
I don't think you'll see that again. I don't think it'll be a repeat of Tokyo.
Yeah, but off the back of being coached by Aralid, he literally outran them, those two, head-to-head in Tokyo, and now he comes ninth. That's just an interesting thing for me on a runner's race, because Tokyo was a runner's race. And it's a year out, and he's got a lot of time to improve and stuff like that. I just think he probably need, you know, was it a wake-up call? I don't know. Maybe it's all part of the master plan. Not sure.
Maybe Talbot tired him out with the 48-hour series.
I don't know. I mean, I did have a funny story. Matt McHatt did not have the greatest swim in the race either. And he said when he came out, he got on his bike and he started running down transition. And he looked over and he said, oh, my God, this might have been Dar Smith. Dar Smith or Christian or Matt Mack, one of the two. They look over and they saw KB's bike and they're like, oh, my God, he's behind us. We're going to get a free ride to the front. Isn't it crazy everything you process when you're running out of transition? And they said that they started riding as hard as they could and they made it up to the top of the Champs. It was Dar Smith, actually. He's like, I made it up to the top of the Champs-Élysées, so I knew I was good. And then I saw KB coming right behind me. And he said, and I jumped on his wheel. And he goes, I've never pushed that high. I think he said he had a 5-minute max wattage. And KB just pulled the entire train solo straight up to the big group in the front. So kind of like what you said, Mark, I don't know. The guy is a nut. I mean, he is. Yeah.
It's interesting. I was a little upset. My pick for the win, Hayden Wild. We were at the venue and he rolls by us and I look at Talbot and I'm like, bro, he's got a strawberry on his shoulder. I wonder what happened. If he crashed yesterday or today or what happened. And then we met up with Team New Zealand and they're like, yeah, he crashed, unfortunately, on the way to the venue. And you could see he was in a lot of pain and he was trying to hide it quite a bit. He was doing somewhat of a good job hiding it. And then I think it was just like, it was too much. Like, hats off to him for starting the race and giving it a go and actually seeing the course. He had like a decent swim. He crushed the bike. I talked to him after the race. They pushed over 400 watts for one of the laps over the cobbles. It was unreal, him and KB. But yeah, that was definitely tough to watch, was him kind of being in pain. And he had definitely eyed this race to be able to put himself in good position for WTCS points and potentially WTCS title. And he's about 40 points behind Alex Yee now after the result this weekend.
But before we move on, Chelsea, in a race like this, I know that this is like, you have so many different athletes in the field. And how much does this take? How much does this change when you go to the Olympics next year, that you're not going to have four Frenchmen in this field? You're only going to have three or maybe two from each country. So actually the field gets a lot smaller. Do you see that making it to where it just stays together even more, or does it split it up even more?
I think it still stays together. So you don't have the depth of five Americans and four French, for example, but you still have like the core, I think 15, maybe 20 very solid athletes. And then you have maybe your last 20, maybe probably last 30 are much weaker than you would have in a World Series. But I don't think it changes the dynamic of a big group. Maybe they're riding with 30 guys instead of 50 guys in the Olympics, but it's all the same players in there. And I think especially the French are going to be going back to the drawing board. I don't know what Vincent Louis' role was the other day. I think that it was pretty clear he wasn't going to finish that run. I don't think he's been running enough, but for them not to be able to solidify a breakaway and to get their guys off. And yeah. And of course he's competing with them for three spots. There's four guys who have been on the top of a World Series podium before that all want a spot in their home Olympics. So I don't know. There's so much behind. You guys learned, I think your eyes are both open to all the drama and politics behind all of these federations and this short course racing and how much stuff goes into these Olympic teams and these races. And it oftentimes isn't the best people that get picked. It's the people that are getting the nod because the federation likes them. And that's the unfortunate reality of these things. I think that for the most part, the best athletes are going to be there, but there's always cases where I think the French are a great example. And the British too, of they've they've got their agenda, and they have these qualification races, and they make extremely hard criteria that some people do hit, but ultimately there is room for discretion, and there's likely going to be discretion always. So yeah, I don't know where I'm going with this, but
no, yeah, I think that our eyes were definitely open being here and being around the athletes, being around the different federations. We've talked a lot in the past couple of weeks just about the Norwegian Federation, but there's so much deeper and more intense drama from all the other federations that don't even scratch the surface of what's going on in Norway. So I think over the next couple of weeks, we can talk about that. And even over the next year leading into the Olympics is something that we should definitely talk about.
Relay.
Should we touch on the duathlon relay quickly? Yeah. So the water was dirty enough today that they didn't swim in the river. Nobody likes a duathlon. I'll pay someone $100 if they find one of these people who wakes up and is like, yes, it is a duathlon. But they were great sports. It is 75% of points. It kind of nullifies the federation's ability to really consider it as, a reasonable glimpse into how a relay triathlon might look. But very unpredictable. I thought France had it in the bag, especially heading into that fourth leg. But Beth Potter and Laura Linneman rode really well and ran really, really well, had a great finish. And our podium was Germany, GB, and then surprise, Belgium for third. MVP of the day, I felt like, was Claire Michelle. Big fan of our podcast. Doesn't know the difference between Kyle and Talbot, but she raced really well today. That was cool to see. So it's those teams that step up and just, you know, small countries knock it out of the park. Talbot?
It was a really fun, exciting relay to watch. I don't think there's much, like we said, that we can even review or chat about on here, because it's just unfortunately not a triathlon. And so I don't think you got to see. I mean, I think we could all agree that Germany and Great Britain and France are going to be the better ones. But it just wasn't a triathlon. But if you are excited and you, we have posted some links that you can get a discount and you're doing a long trainer ride, it is a very exciting race to watch. And you get to watch all the athletes leave it all out there on the course. On to that, Christian Blumenfeld. Mark, can you just tell us again, describe to us what Christian Blumenfeld did this week?
We didn't do a relay. He did. He then hopped on a plane and he flew over 10 hours to Singapore, which has a 6-hour time difference. So, but he also traveled all the way down from Font-Romeu to Paris, which is a fair old shift in itself. Does the race, gets on a plane that night, flies to to Singapore. And then they have a video of him in the
13 hours.
There you go. 6-hour time difference. Where he's on the treadmill in his hot kit, you know, doing some running to try and do some, like, stretch his legs out, acclimatize a little bit, and then he raced the next day. It was amazing. It was a very sensible financial decision, like, as it turns out, because he won the race. Other than that, he also bagged him the highest ever PTO points. What? I've no idea how that's come about. It was the worst PTO race we've seen so far, but it's because he actually had a winning margin. Which they never have in those races. They never have a margin.
I hate to admit whenever I'm right, but I'm pretty sure 3 weeks ago I said that Milwaukee was going to be the most exciting PTO race of the year.
By miles, mate. Not of the year. I think it's maybe the best ever.
You love to admit when you're right. You brag about it on the show every 2 seconds.
What do you mean? I didn't brag about.
Let's just run through the race real quick. The race started off. Sam Laidlow flew in.
Have I missed the women's? The women's came first.
Yeah, let's start with the women.
All right.
The women's was the day before, wasn't it?
Rewind.
Yeah. Give us a rundown, Mark.
Okay. The women's race was. Again, it wasn't the hottest of the races we've seen this year. The field was a little bit lackluster, but some of the things that were really interesting was Lucy Charles got beat in a swim. Like, When do you ever see that? If it's going to be anyone, though, it's probably going to be Sarah Perez Salah, and she took it to Lucy Charles in the swim. Those two then rode together for a while, but they just weren't really fast enough. They were just bleeding a little bit of time. And there were some riders on the road just riding much better than them. The likes of Imogen Simmons was riding faster. Anne Haug was shredding them. And Ashley Gentle was riding faster. So they eventually get caught, and Ashley Gentle goes solo on her own at the front of the race. Anne Haug is dangling about 30 seconds back until, I don't know if I want to call it mechanical. She basically wrapped one of her inner tubes around her bottle cage and put an elastic band over it, and it unwrapped, fell on her back wheel. Fair play to her. She got it sorted, and it was properly wedged in her cassette. And then she gets riding again after losing literally 2.5 minutes back. It was a good old wait by the road. She doesn't run that great for her. You know, she's only runs 20 seconds faster than Ashley Gentle. Ashley Gentle took the win. Anne Haug came second. And then Chelsea Sodaro actually had the fastest run of the day, having lost a bit of time on the bike. But then she, you know, she ran the likes of, I mean, what is that? 8 minutes, 7 minutes, almost 8 minutes into Lucy Charles. Like, Chelsea Sodaro was flying on the run, but she lost an awful lot of time on the bike. So we'll see if the bike legs come around. Those 100K riding is very different to Ironman riding. That's pretty much the sum up. Ashley Gentle, Anne Haug, Chelsea Sodaro, with Imogen Simmons as a bit of a comeback race, we'll call it, for fourth. And Lucy Charles, fifth. Do you know when she last was off a top three podium? Mid-2019 was the last time she finished a race off a podium. How fucking mad is that?
I'm going to put my tinfoil hat on here and just say that this is with no factual proof in any way, shape, or form. I would guess that the PTO needed some big names to start here and paid Lucy to show up. Lucy doesn't show up unless she's ready to race.
I agree. I think that
they said, Lucy, we need you here. I mean, you can just read her and Reese's post. We weren't ready. We're on our way to Kona. I'm so proud of Lucy for just accepting that big old paycheck and coming on out. There's nothing wrong with it. I ain't hating it at all. She brought a lot of viewers, and she raced great. But that's not Lucy. What we watched there was not Lucy Charles.
Lucy's the most brilliant. We could talk about consistency of athletes, and there are some that are always there. Taylor Spivey in the short course is misconsistent. Lucy is the most consistent athlete in the world of triathlon for like the last 5 years. Utterly incredible. So I'd hate to agree with your Oklahoma tinfoil hat theories, but in this case, get me a hat made up.
So we're accepting the fact that the PTO is paying start fees and appearance fees when they said they never would. That's going to be a thing that we're believing.
The rumor is very strong at the moment.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. But they've said in the past they were never going to pay appearance fees.
Outright said it's never happening.
Yeah. Okay. Just so we're clear there. Yeah.
But we don't know that it is. It's just strong rumors from lots of, and we're just speculating.
It could also be that it's not they're saying it's not an appearance fee. It's a encouragement to race.
Or like a media, or they paid for a media day or whatever. But do I disagree with it? Like, no, it's your prerogative. They're a big company to make money, to try and promote their brand.
Challenge Roth has done it. Ironman's done it in the past. Like, everyone's
just the saying they don't do it. If they then did it, would be the problem. Yeah. But otherwise, I've got no drama with it. Yeah. Like, it makes sense.
There should just be a line in the sand where they said, yep, we're going to do appearance fees from now on. So,
and of course, they should tell, if they use the phrase like co-owner, the athletes are the co-owner of the organization, is a phrase they've used. If they are, in fact, co-owners, they should, of course, be informed of financial decisions like that. But, like, I have no problem with it. I think it's sensible, if anything. I'd do it if I was in Sam Renif's shoes. Of course you would.
Can we talk real quick? Talbot and I were analyzing a little bit of the Asian Open, and do you want to talk about it, Talbot? About running a run course to run the tangents rather than running on the outsides of the.
I just want to bounce back to the women's race real quick. Couples are very unfortunate. And the thing that you hate to see the most is if mechanical costs an athlete time X and they lose by time Y or whatever.
Yeah.
And the win. Exactly. And if you look at the tracker and you do the math on the tracker, she lost 2 minutes and 10 seconds. If you do the math on the tracker. So Ashley beat her by 2:15. So it gives you a little bit of confidence that Ashley, and then you don't know what Ashley had in the tank, and you don't know what Anne had in the tank as well, because it's kind of like, she's 2 minutes away, I'm not catching her, I got 5K to go, it's whatever. So it's very unfortunate that we would have seen an incredible run battle due to the rookie mistake of taping your tube on the back. So
I think that's really well worded. The people that were unfortunate were the fans. We lost out because of her mistake. So it's not necessarily unfortunate for Anne. Like, it was, you saw the photo at the back of her bike. Mm-hmm. What on earth was that? Like, that's
I mean, they ran pretty much the same time, and they would have come off and run pretty much toe to toe. So that was, very,
it's,
very
it's
unfortunate.
Weird that Anne ran the same time. It's weird that Chelsea ran faster than them. Like, Anne, was that just because she'd lost the time and she's tired now? Because all year, Anne runs that time down. Every other race all year, she runs to that win easy. She's been so much better than anyone else. I just thought, like, if you looked at the Milwaukee race, Ashley Gentle can't keep up with Paula and Lucy Byram on the bike. Yet here, she's riding off the front on her own a minute clear. Was the standard just much lower? Did Ashley have a much better race? Is Anne off form all of a sudden? Like,
could be the course. It's not as flat. I mean, there's more, more to the story.
Ashley, I guess, climbs quite well, you would think.
Yes, she rode well in Andorra, right? So,
yeah, true.
Yeah, Mark, I guess I would, when you said those 3 points, I just said yes, yes, yes. I think those were all three factors in this weekend's race. And ultimately, yeah. I don't want to spend like too much time. I want to just probably it's impossible not to judge the race and think about what ifs and what could be's. And we should probably do a better job of just assessing the race and those who were in it. And I think thinking of the, you know, what we didn't get to see, and Talbot worded it really eloquently, was like the fans lost out given the mechanical.
It was boring, really.
You know, and I think we're going to save it for hot takes on what we think the number and the field size should be, but let's now move. I think we're ready to move to the men's race.
Yeah. Good show.
Men's race had way more drama, I think, than the women's race.
Oh. I mean, go on then, boys.
All right. I'll take it. Day before the race, Sam Laidlow says that he has a fever. Doesn't know if he's going to be racing. Does the race, does the swim. Sam Laidlow comes out in the pack in the swim with Aaron Royal, Sam Appleton, Josh Amberger, Daniel Backegaard, Ben Canute, and Mika Newt. I mean, it was a pretty big pack. It was seven of them. Florian Anger and Christian Blumenfeld. After that, Peter Heimerich absolutely annihilated the bike. Had a phenomenal race up until the run when he got passed by Christian Blumenfeld. And then the race kind of ended from there with mechanicals for Tom Bishop, mechanical for Jason West. He like supposedly crashed on the bike along with Gustav Iden. They didn't crash together, but they both crashed. And then also mechanical for Bugsy, Aaron Royal.
So, yeah, but something's going on because like Aaron Royal crashed, Gustav Iden crashed, Jason West crashed. I mean, I'm not really sure what. Talbot, do you know something that we don't?
All on the same spot. When they went around that U-turn, they put this thick tape for the timing. And the tape must have been damp or wet, and every single one of the athletes crashed. Ooh. Sorry, I don't want to say every single one. I know that Aaron Royal crashed the same spot as Gustav Iden. So that I thought that was very interesting.
Mark, it looks like Kat's chiming in. What does she have to say?
No, Kat just got home from swimming. I was meant to have dinner on. It ain't happened. no, nothing. A lot of drama on the bike. Like, but this, you add a bit of technicality in triathlon, like Gran Canaria a couple of years ago, there were crashes everywhere as soon as it happens. Shame to see another mechanical for Tom Bishop. That's two PTO races in a row when he's been riding really well.
Yeah, we're seeing this. You know, there were a handful of punctures. My whole piece on this stuff is there's a lot of opportunity to gain time with tires based on what watts you can save. You do take a penalty on how robust that tire is. And I think in long course, when you're on it for 80K, in a Ironman, you're on it for 180K. It's a big risk, and it's something that you really got to consider. Yeah, Talbot.
The biggest, most surprising thing, maybe Mark can talk on this. I have no idea. I couldn't tell you the complexity, the science or what it is. the craziest stat they said on there was when Jack Kelly came on and said that the Canyon mechanic was doing the interview and said, from the time the athletes racked their bikes until they got onto their bikes, 5 popped tires in transition. 5. The mechanics were going insane.
I'm going to let Mark take this one.
It's just fucking amateur hour.
Yeah. Yeah. It's Mark.
Fucking amateur hour. 100%. So like thermal expansion is all this is. So was it the Canyon mechanic? Who was it? Was it Vincent or was it?
No, it was like been in PTO races before.
Did they get Tony Foy?
I don't know the name.
If they did, I love a bit of Tony Foy. I know he listens to this. He's the PTO mechanic. So if the tire bursts because the pressure got too much, I would be slightly surprised. There's a couple of things that could go wrong. So thermal expansion occurs when you pump up to a certain pressure at Y temperature. Temperature increases to X, causing the air inside the tire to expand. Black obviously sits in the sun, it soaks up the heat, so it's even more inside the tire. So the relative pressure of the tire increases to the point where it can then burst. Now, that's used to be really a problem when people were running tubs at like 130, 140 psi, where the margin for error was quite low.
On a 21 or a 23 mil tire, mind you.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Because the actual relative volume was lower as well. So the space for the expansion was lower. Basically, you have to fuck it up pretty badly nowadays for you to pump up a tire with like 25, 28 mil tire, especially tubeless, which they'll all be running, and the air to get so hot that it expands so much that it bursts off a hooked rim, you really have to make a mistake. I think the more likely thing is that people put a brand new tire on the day before the race with fresh sealant in it, and the sealant isn't all dried and run in properly, and then it expands a bit and causes a burst. Just hypothesizing, but it's user error. It's just user error. Like, and I've said this on the show before, way back when 2019, Kat did Australia, and I was trying to work out the maths. I was consulting with some, you know, to make sure I had the maths right, to work out how far under you pump the tire up for when it heats up. And we went like 25 PSI lower to get it right. Like, it's just user error, Talbot. It's a really good question, mate. Yeah.
How do you fix that?
I was shocked to hear that.
You do the maths. So you have to look at the weather forecast, especially for the men and the women's. Like, the men have been there. You could go out in the morning, measure the temperature you're going to pump up at, measure the temperature and on the tire that you're going to then race at, and you pump up. You then do the backward maths on the expansion. So it's going to go from X degree to Y degree. That will cause an increase in volume of X or whatever it is, and you pump up to that. That's basically the answer, mate. Yeah. Sorry,
Mark,
really
can
boring.
We just get a full on? Can we just get a full on episode of importance of tire pressure and how to do the calculations and all that? Can we get you to get someone on?
Well, actually, great question, because we're trying to get the guy from Silka to come on, who I think runs the best online free calculator on tire pressure. He knows a lot more about a lot of everything else, and he's a friend of Pat's. So I promise you, the show will be more interesting than the fucking nonsense I just dribbled there. But yes, Talbot, yes, you can.
The other interesting takeaway, Peter Heimrich, usually when you get past athletes go backwards quick, he was able to even hold off Jason West, which was
he is on unbelievable awesome for form. Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. He's done Hamburg, Tallinn, and this now. It's like way back when he won the Challenge Champs, if you remember, a few years ago. Like, he was Challenge's poster boy. And then he had a dud year last year. It was just not very good. He's back, right?
Yeah. So he's definitely on his way back. Jason, it'd be interesting to hear from him. I didn't hear until after the race that he did crash on the bike, which is just very, very unfortunate. You got to wonder if that took some out of his pep on the run. And it seems like he never has really good bike luck in the races. But that plays against him too. I mean, it will be interesting to see if he gets on a real bike next year.
A real bike.
Oh, sorry, I didn't mean it like that. If he gets on a bike next year. I mean, sorry, if he gets on like a more... I should just shut up before I Give myself tell,
there goes our Ventum. This is when
Talbot's like, you know, yeah. I wonder, I'm so weird why nobody's hiring me for these jobs. Like, what is
yeah,
going
exactly.
On?
Kyle, we might have to cut that clip. I found it terrible.
Talbot loves Specialized Trek, Canyon, Giant, Live. You know, he's all for it. Focus, anything. Like, he's good.
Ventum, I hear you make a great road bike and a great gravel bike. So if you ever want to send those our way, we would be more than happy to ride them.
Look, I want to just give me a second here. Are we going to, I think it's really important to talk about the athletes that did the Asian Open that are now coming back to Europe to do 70.3 Worlds. But are we going to do a separate 70.3 preview because the start list we've seen change up so much, or what are we thinking? Are we going to talk about that now?
I say we roll to 70.3 Worlds today.
Are you guys?
I don't have time to talk about another podcast.
Talbot or Kyle's real work when he lands is going to be just
it's going to be nothing but work for the next like 2.5 months.
All right, so let's Mark walk us through 70 point. No, I will. Okay, then I will. So let's think about
are we done with Asia Open?
Oh, okay. Well,
I'm done with it. It was boring. I watched the Women's Soccer World Cup final instead. I started with the Asia Open, Soccer World Cup final.
Okay, here's where I think we meant
to go. Let's hit it in the hot takes then.
Okay, so we're gonna do 70.3 Worlds and then hot takes.
Two more things real quick. Ironman 70.3 Ireland, Kyle Smith won, Nicholas Quinet second, Christoph Gray third, the women's side Marlene DeBoer, Abigail Bedford, and third place Rosie Wetson. There was some wild waves at 70.3 Ireland. Unfortunately, there was two people that passed away in the swim, so our hearts go out to them and their families. Also, Ironman Sweden, Lisa Norden won by nearly 8 minutes over Justine Mathieu and Susie Cheatham.
Does bag them qualification slots for Kona, a couple of those, so Mathieu and Cheatham.
Yeah. Ironman Mont-Tremblant is still going on. This is the last qualification for Kona, and it is the last time for Ironman Mont-Tremblant. Currently, Meredith Kessler is winning the race. Second place, Rachel Zelenkis, and third place, Sarah Crowley. We'll see if anything changes from that, but it seems that might be your result by the end of the day, barring any blowups.
Meredith Kessler's beating Sarah Crowley.
Correct.
That is phenomenal for Meredith. That is phenomenal. And she loves that course as well. So I am stoked for her.
Yeah, that's Ironman. Is it 984 for her? Is it Talbot? Or
is, I had something like that. I mean, she's a beast, man. She's a beast.
She's like Mother Hen for the young pros as well.
Dee Dee Griesbauer is another phenomenal athlete. Meredith Kessler, it's incredible to see that she still gets up there on podiums and stuff. Like, what a beast. Mental. What a beast. 70.3 Worlds.
Look, as always, I want to thank Waterfall Bank for bringing you all these amazing shows all year long. Be sure to visit waterfallbank.com. Put your money in a bank that helps support your athletes. You can also join the Waterfall Racing team. It's towards the end of the season, championship season. Get yourself a Waterfall Racing kit. $75 to join. Comes with a bunch of benefits, and the Waterfall team for 2024 will be epic. I'm hearing some great news about what's to come for that team, so be on the lookout and be sure to get registered with Waterfall Bank. 70.3 Worlds.
Look, I'll tell you what I think we can anticipate, and it's going to be a wetsuit swim. It's going to be a bike that's, you know, relatively flat. The roads are going to be fairly narrow. And then the run, you know, it should be under what will be northern European, I don't know, conditions, right? So I don't think it's going to be incredibly hot by any means. And I think it's going to, you'll see some fast times.
I think it's a good, honest bike course. I think it's quite a rolling, like, nice bike course.
Sorry, I just want to clarify. That wasn't me saying easy, but compared to St. George last year, where it has like some concentrated specific climbing, this is a much different style of race than what we saw in St. George.
For sure, yeah.
So we had, you know, and heat was an element too, you know, in St. George as well. So I think we're going, with the exception of the wetsuit swim, we're kind of going in opposite style of how the race was last year. Yeah. You know, look, I think the interesting piece will be is the athletes that the timing here is interesting, right? So I think this is a very perfectly placed on the calendar for the women who are racing Kona, right? This is a perfect hit out. It's to check in with your form, see what's going on. But on the men's side, I think it's a little bit tighter. And so you know, you have seen somebody like a Magnus Ditlev who chose not to race 70.3 Worlds because he's fully focused on his prep for Ironman World Championships in September in Nice. So I think the story for me is going to be on the men's side, right? It's Christian Blumenfeld, Gustav Iden. And I thought, you know, Gustav, you don't think so?
Pierre Lacour.
Not Gustav. Pierre okay. Lacour. Gustav is
that's just been shut
phenomenal.
I'm
sorry.
He does a first race preview, and me and you can't help ourselves. Pat,
you just
sorry. I know. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
I'm going to get an ice pack right now from the freezer, and I'm going to sit on it and see what happens. I just think the issue here is I guess I had a lot of faith in Gustav Iden because he's won this race twice, right?
As he should, yeah, right.
And so I thought, okay, like he's had an incredibly rough year, but I still see him and hold him in high regard for this weekend. Now, this weekend's crash, you fall on your hip, you've got all week, it's a little bit harder. I think, you know, for me, I see a world where I think we said that this was Jason West's race to lose. I'm a little nervous after his fall today. And I'm a little less confident in his ability, and it is something that I'm, you know, you get on a plane on a 15-hour flight, and with a banged up hip, it's not an easy thing to come back from. And the problem is, and this is something that doesn't get spoken about, this used to be an 11-hour flight, but now because you have to fly around Russia, it adds 3 or 4 hours to the flight. And it's just, that's a lot of extra time on a plane. I don't care what seat you're sitting in. It's a long journey. And
let's be honest as well. Like Jason West is in economy right now. You know, he's not Jan Frodeno. That's not an insult. We're in economy. Like he ain't Krista. He ain't Christian. He ain't Jan. He's not Daniela. He's in economy and he's flying around Russia. By the way, I'd much rather go round it than over it right now.
Sure. I mean, so I think that all of a sudden, this and I apologize for my bias. This plays into the hands of a guy like Lionel Sanders, where you have a bunch where you have a bunch of athletes that had some other stuff going on, and you've got a guy that can.
That's a good point. He's very focused on this.
He's been focused on
that. You better get off the sit off the ice pack and go get into an ice bath.
He's focused.
You're gonna need to ice him.
Talbot, like Lionel's all in for this, is he?
Lionel is focused on this, but this is the problem. Every single one of us said to Singapore that Jason West, this was the race to lose. And dude, the Norwegian steam train comes straight from Paris on a nonstop to Singapore and was like, "What up, boys? I just got here last night. Sorry I'm late. I got to take this 100K and I'm heading to Finland."
So I think Jason West lost out on a bit of strength of depth, like the crashes and stuff like that. He didn't have people to work with to keep him in touch with him. And then he crashed himself, of course. And that's, we don't know what that did. So yeah, I'm not going to take anything away from Singapore,
I said to Christian, I said, "You know, Jason West can be the number one athlete at the end of the year." And he says, how? And I says, "He wins Singapore and he wins 70.3 Worlds and he's the number one ranked athlete." And he says, "No, I win Singapore and I win 70.3 Worlds." And
yeah, like, but he said that about Milwaukee. It's convenient.
I'm like,
you get it right.
Dude, I'm like, dude, you're human at some point. Like you are a human at some point. And he's like, no, I can beat him. And I'm like, this is what Jason has at this race. It's draft legal. So you can ride at the 10-meter drop zone. And I'm not hating on Jason at all. This is no fair play. Jason, I still believe, will win 70.3 World Championship. But
so I'm going Pierre Lacour.
I've heard many people here on the ground saying, Pierre Lacour has never lost to 70.3.
Has not lost one.
We saw him racing Lanzarote, and he is going to win this with his eyes shut.
And St. George.
Oh, yes. Wait.
I know. Oceanside.
Oh, Oceanside.
No, that was...
Leo Berger.
Leo Berger. That was Leo Berger.
Sorry, French.
I was confused on why... I know. Yeah, I get him confused too. I was confused on why Leo's not racing.
Just different build, I guess. I'm going Pierre Lacourlo. Sonnet. I think this is combined male and female, the best field of the year so far. Better than Ibiza and better than like Milwaukee. Just because like on the women's side, you've got Nib, Finley, Reif, Emma Pallant-Brown over this distance, Holly Lawrence, Jackie Herron, Laura Phillip is there as well, which we've not seen. Druitt, Marjolaine Pierre, Ellie Salthouse is there. Like, that is a stacked women's field. And then on the men's side, we can write Gustav off a bit this year, but he's the reigning champion. He won the Ironman World Champs. He's won the 70.3 World Champs. And Christian Blumenfeld, Ben Canute, Tag Holt, like Long, Pierre Lacour, like we said, a bit different. Jason West is there, Lionel Sanders. It's the best combined field so far. No matter what the PTO want to stack up for me, I think it's the best combined field.
And I'm sorry, for the viewers, Kyle, walk us through the schedule for 70.3 Worlds. Are these on separate days this year, or what is that?
That is correct. They are on separate days. The men race on Sunday, and the women race on Saturday.
All right.
The course, it is a point-to-point swim, a one-loop bike course, and then the run course is two loops. So,
have you been to a little bit Finland, of a hilly.
I have not. I head out on Tuesday, but
you're in for a treat.
I do know
it's
this.
Beautiful.
That's what I've heard. I'm really excited. I do know this. Is it in and Pat or Mark shouted on this? If you listen to our post U.S. Open show, when you're doing loops on a course, it's hard for people to break away to get all that. When there's not going to be a lot of people out there giving time updates. When it's a solo loop course, you don't hear those repetitive time updates, and athletes can either get away and athletes can hunt from the back a lot harder than what they usually do when there's just a long road ahead. So I would say with Lionel playing into this, I would say he's definitely going to have a better race. But a lot of this will depend on the group up front. If there is a big group that forms up front, that will definitely not play into his strengths. But Sam Long and Lionel, that will help him. But Lionel did focus on this. A lot of these athletes went all the way to Asia, and now they're coming all the way to Europe. But we're in for a treat on the men's race. It's going to be a stacked field, and women's field.
I know no one likes talking about this, but it is something worth mentioning. It's supposed to rain all week in Finland. So literally Saturday, like Monday through Sunday. So we'll see what happens with the
couldn't
with
love
the course.
That anymore.
Yeah.
I'm
bring your rain jacket. Bring your rain jacket.
More rain, more better.
Yeah. I think, I think on the women's side, we're in for just as great of a race. I think we're going to be sitting here on the back of it. And Mark nailed it. Maybe these are the two best fields that have been assembled this year for the depth of field. And I think from, you know, we get a lot of whispers and chatter about the shakeups on the start list come this week. I don't think we've gotten any whispers that people are going to pull off or there's going to be some big shakeup. So,
because it's a world title.
Yeah.
Like, it means more than just the cash. Just like it. And lots of these athletes have this written into their contracts.
Yep.
Go on, Talbot, mate.
Can I just read a comment that I'm not in any way hating on PTO, because I think that we're going to see the best race series ever next year. You're going to watch the best athletes in the world, minus Christian at all the races. But Kyle put the prize purse up and or the money up, and someone commented this. They said, did it get deleted, Kyle?
I don't know which comment you're talking about.
Someone said, you got paid $100,000 to beat. Oh, sorry.
I saw this comment.
It said $100,000 for beating Peter Heimrich and Jason West. Laughing face. Shows prize money isn't everything for most triathletes still. What a boring race this was. This is a world title on the line.
I mean, it's a bit of a slap in the face of Peter Heimrich and Jason West, but the point stands. Like, you win 100 grand and you don't even have to beat Jan
Verdino, Alistair Brownlee.
or even like Léo Bégère or Pierre Lacour or like these other diverse athletes that make the race really hard.
Mm-hmm. We're going to see a big one.
World title.
Yeah. How so is
we're
this?
We're going to see a big race this weekend.
I'm sorry, but how in the world was this race in Singapore a 92 soft score? I'm still just mind blown by this. That according to the soft score,
they're not doing great. But like Gustav,
like according to the soft score rankings, this race was more competitive than what 70.3 Worlds is. Like even on paper, we realize that 70.3 Worlds by far is more competitive. But by the book of the soft score, like this race was more competitive
because the ranking is so heavy towards 100k athletes, so they're higher up. So yeah, like you look at Rife, she doesn't really count. Like she does count, but she's lower than she is or should be because it's weighted towards the 100k, etc.
Right.
Okay, where is
Pierre Lacour does not have rankings.
Yeah, look, we're at a fork in the road here, guys, because we're at 70 minutes recording one of our longest podcasts. And yeah, I think if we talked about these hot takes, we might go on for.
Can we just pick podiums for the men's and women's race and then move to hot takes?
We didn't even chat about the women's race.
Okay. All right.
I'm sorry. We got to cover the women's race. It's a phenomenal Taylor Nib rolling into town. You got Laura Phillip. You got Kat Matthews. I mean, it is a phenomenal field as well. I mean, Paula Finley.
Emma Pallant Brown.
It's a big race, this. Nip swims off the front. There's maybe someone else in there that swims with her. I'm not sure. Lucy Buckingham's there, so Lucy Buckingham goes with her. Maybe there's some others, not too sure who. And then Nip does her thing on the bike, drops those two. We'll see how she holds up. Rife then swims in the next pack towards the front of it, the way she's been swimming. Paula Finley's in there. Holly Lawrence is in there. Elise Salthouse is in there. There's some athletes that are getting dangerously close to making that pack as they improve. They'd like to be in there as well. It's then, does Rife explode and drop all those girls? Or is Rife on the hill towards Kona will be the big question. If Rife explodes out the front of that, can she catch Taylor Nib? Taylor Nib didn't ride as well as she has done in Milwaukee. You know, if Lucy Byram can ride the same as her, Rife would like to think she can outride her. I actually think Lucy Byram's just really good. But that would be interesting to see. And then the run race, how much lead does Taylor Nib need? Well, nowadays, nothing really. She's probably the shoe-in favorite for this, unless Rife goes over the top of her and drops her. Don't see that happening. So for me, I don't know about you boys, I have Nib for the win. What do you reckon, Talbs?
This is the second time that Taylor has raced Daniela Rife, and the first time we saw the coming out party at the 21 Collins Cup, where Taylor on her road bike annihilated the field and won it. And then we saw it again at the World Championships in St. George, where Nib got third. Rife has never beat Taylor, and I think that she will solidify herself. The GOAT, you are the GOAT, but I am here, and I'm ready to put my stamp on being the best triathlete in the world, and I'm going to continue my reign. And so I just think that we saw Taylor's run. We were all like, oh, Ash is going to run her down. Ash is going to run her down at the U.S. Open. And we saw Rife run away with it. And so I just think that I would say Taylor could spot Rife, I would say, 2 to 3 minutes off the bike and be comfortable at the pace that she's running at. I mean, it's a new level of racing. This is where we're seeing the level of females of our sport just elevating and elevating and elevating, which is exciting. But I just see Taylor taking it.
Agree, basically.
So
you want to go next, Pat, or you want me to go first? Go next.
You go.
All right. I'm going to go with on the women's side. It's hard to pick against my girl, Taylor Nib. She is absolutely changing the game at 70.3. And I think she's going to defend her title and then win this race and then get ready and go to Ponte Vedra, or not go to Ponte Vedra, and we'll see what the rest of the season looks like for her. I'm sure it's going to be extremely busy, but yeah, I'm putting all my eggs on Taylor Nib for the win. Second place, I'm actually going to go with Kat Matthews. I think that she's going to make up a lot of time on the bike here, and I think that she's going to run extremely well. And then third place, I think Tamara Jewett will bleed time on the bike. She'll have a good swim, come out in a good pack, and then she'll just bleed time on the bike. And then I can't doubt her running abilities. And so I'm going to go with her for third.
Perfect. I think, are we going to throw some men's picks in there too while we're at it? Kyle?
Yeah. For the men, I'm going to go with, for the win, this was my dark horse. I called this a few months ago, but my dark horse for the win, I'm not even going to say dark horse, but I'm just going to say for the win, I'm going to go Andreas Salzberg, great swimmer. I think that he's got what it takes on the bike, and I think he's going to surprise some people on the run. Second place, I'm going to go Matthias Margier, who's had a great season so far, and I think that he's going to annihilate the field. And third place, I'm going to go Sam Long.
Wow. I do love your niche picks. They are good. Like, it gets people thinking.
Morgan Pearson, I said it, and comes and gets sixth place. So, I mean, sometimes it pays off, and other times I just look like an idiot. People are like,
you have no idea what you're talking
place,
about. Though.
Sixth place. Sixth place is what it takes to be right these days. I like
it. Yeah. Look, I'm going to go and I'll go the men. I'm going to be super boring. I'm going to go Lionel Sanders in third, and then I'm going to say Jason West in second, and I am going to say Christian Blumenfeld for the win.
Yeah.
I'm going to, for the women, I'm going to say Laura Phillip third. I am going to say Kat Matthews in second, because I think that all of a sudden this distance, it comes back into her hand a little bit, and there's going to be a bit more having to think for yourself on the road, and Kat's background will suit her greatly. So Kat Matthews will get second. And, you know, look, I think it's no secret that Taylor Nibb is the favorite for this race. And I think that that's the reality.
Yeah. So I've got the men's still to pick. I like that. There's some logic in what you're saying there. And I've got some confidence in that. I'm going to take Pierre Lacour for the win. I just think he's running brilliantly, like really well. He swims with the front pack. He doesn't get dropped on that bike. And I just think he runs to the win. I just think the travel has to catch up with KB, et cetera, at some point. Does he get second, though? Does Christian Blumenfeld get second? Yeah, he does. KB comes second, and then the rest gets swallowed up, and Jason West hangs out for third. That's what I'm going with.
The only reason why I'm not picking Pierlo on my podium is I think these WTCS bikes are strong, but when Christian can just mow down a field like that, I just think that they're not as strong as we believe them to be.
That's
Pierre Lacour has spent all of his eggs on the test event, and he wants to come here to get a world title, and he's going to try to swing it. But I just don't believe with the speed that Christian and them are going to be riding that you can just sneak in and hop on a TT bike when you haven't been training on it. So I'm going to go KB, West, and Sanders. And then on my female podium, I'm going to put at the end Paula Finley. Big old Paula.
Yeah, we always have a good bike ride. Always sleep on Paula.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pat, we got to run through these hot takes real quick. I promise you they'll be fast.
It is Stanley's sixth birthday party in short amount of time, and we're at Bounce Empire. Okay. So we're going to hammer this.
All right, here we go. Should they change the bike course for Paris because everyone was together and the runners won?
You guys, I'm sorry. Here's the reality.
Say yes or no, Pat.
Suck it up.
I agree.
Yes,
no.
Yes.
Not at
yes,
all.
Yes, yes, yes. I want them going up the hill, up Champs-Élysées, and it'll make the course way more competitive. I've talked to multiple people, multiple coaches that have had athletes on the podium in this race, and even they want the bike course to change.
City planners, like,
yeah, just
yeah. I don't even know why this is even a hot take, to be honest, because it ain't happening. This is the test event. They tested the course. They ain't changing it.
Yeah, this is it.
Good course.
Next one. French men 3, 4, 5. Do you think they're happy? Not happy? Good.
The problem for them is surely the gap between 1 and 2. Ye was so much better than everyone else. That's the hard thing for everyone to try and work out what to do about, because he didn't come across the gap. I thought you were right to point out how insanely good KB and Wild were on the bike. You know, the French were trying that gap so hard, and they just rode across it like it was easy. So not only did that fail for them, they couldn't get rid of Ye in the swim. Well, now what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
With that, Vincent Louis DNF'd, had a tear in his calf. I mean, at this point, I almost don't know if A, Vince is going to make the team, or B, if Vince is going to be a domestique. Like, the French Mafia has got to figure something out.
How does he get ahead of Pierre Lacour or Dorian Connex or Le Bajet? It's three, isn't it?
Yeah, no.
There's just no way. He's out, in my opinion.
I've never appreciated long course more. I've never been in a race that involved so much drama, from personal drama to federation drama, in my entire life. Every time you go up to an athlete, it's he said this, she said this, they're getting this. I'm like, holy crap. So
it's a giant race.
That hasn't we changed, should touch on has that. It? Pat, how long's that been?
We should chat on this more.
I mean, I guess, you know, I see it, but I just think we just did a way better job of ignoring it. And now you got two kids, so it's like I completely ignore it. And the stuff that I hear, I'm just like, here.
Pat didn't see any of it because Gwen was too busy winning gold medals, and USA Triathlon was rolling out the red carpet when she got to know.
Honestly, no, but when I was traveling with people to races in like 2009, the drama was there. Same shit. Federation don't do this. So and so gets paid this. I don't.
It's just, here's the thing is like, I luckily, thankfully have just touch points in so many sports. And it's like, it's just people are plagued in all sports with the grass is always greener. And luckily I've got enough perspective in my life now. And if I could just be pleading to people to just be grateful for what you have, stop complaining. And, you know, sometimes the best thing about having kids is it provides a very welcome distraction. And so I just don't get sucked into it. But yeah, I'm sure it just never ends.
Dude, and it's like a cancer that feeds off itself. It's crazy.
Yeah,
you boys have had it, haven't you? Wow, you've really got sucked into it.
Literally, I feel like I'm like eyes wide open. I've seen the
Asia
light.
Asia open hype. We put up an Instagram poll, like, what is it? Is it missing Jan Frodeno? Was it the Paris test event that took it away? Was it the depth of field? Or was it Talbot's Race Week series? Luckily, the Talbot's Race Week series is actually pretty high in there. I don't know what it is, though. I just think that...
I think it's just depth of field. 70.3 worlds. It clashed. It clashed with the test event and 70.3 worlds. And so at the moment, I think people care about those two things more, unfortunately, for the PTO.
Yeah. The last thing I put on here, it's the partnership for World Triathlon and PTO. I put it on here because I just want you guys to know we would love to talk about it. But this is like, we should have someone on here like Sam Renouf to chat about it more. It's too much. And then we get to hear and argue on the pros and cons. So we're going to skip that for this week. But with that being said, I can't thank everyone enough for listening to the show. It's absolutely incredible. The fact that we're here in Paris for the test event, it's been an amazing event. It was really cool to go to some of the media stuff and look around and know that there was not another media organization here other than us. We truly love the sport, and I'm not sitting here bragging on that, but the only reason why we're able to come to this is because of the support that you guys give us and the incredible sponsors like Waterfall Bank, Magic Five, and many more. So just want to thank you all so much for listening. The best way that you can help is literally if you just buy our sponsor's product, sign up with Magic Five, with Waterfall Bank, and share this podcast with your friends and tell them to train while they listen to it. With that being said, we'll be tuning to you live. Mark and I will be together, 70.3 Worlds, joining the other gang on the other side, and we will see you again next week with a recap show. Peace out.
First place today for Alex Yee. People are throwing stuff at him, trying to get him to sign autographs. Alex, first place today, dominating performance. How was it?
Yeah, no, it was pretty cool, I guess. I didn't come into this race with really any expectations. I just wanted to learn as much as we could about the course and deliver the best Olympic distance race I could. And that's what I've been working towards. And yeah, man, just happy that everything came together. Yeah.
Over the moon for you. Olympic qualification today?
Yeah. So because I have an Olympic medal now, and then I've medaled at the Olympic test event, that means that I'm on the plane for next year, which is bizarre. But yeah, really honored to be going to my second Olympics.
What do you think of the course today?
Yeah, no, it's awesome. I think it's so fast. I think Yeah. So I don't really know. There were so many different iterations of what was going on, including the swim. Like there was the current, which was a bit of a battle back.
Yeah.
And then just on the run, just sticking to probably the shortest lines and just getting things right. But yeah.
Let's talk about the swim real quick. You had the best swim you've had this season.
Yeah, no, I'm buzzing with that. I've been feeling dreadful in the pool, honestly. So for me to be able to deliver that, I'm buzzing. Hopefully it's just like that's my standard now. I keep wanting to set the standard high, and hopefully I can just keep delivering races like that again and again and again. But we'll have to see.
Yeah. Eyes on Pontevedra to get a world title?
Yeah, I don't know the iterations now of what's going on between Hayden, Vasco, Hauser, and I. Sorry to see Hayden go out. It's always a bit shit to see somebody go like that when he doesn't deserve that. So sorry about that. But it's going to be a great showdown come Pontevedra at the end of the year, and hopefully do my best to be with those guys and give it a good race.
Thanks, Hayden. Thanks, Alex. Appreciate
wrong
it.
Run. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. You want my sunglasses?
Oh, yeah. Really? Yeah. Ah, cheers.
All right. Second place today, Vasco. You had a fantastic sprint finish. How was it?
I think it was a pretty fast sprint finish. Now I'm looking forward to seeing that on camera afterwards. I remember in Sunderland, I wasn't there in the final sprint, but when Lecor came past Berger, that looked amazing. And I was, I knew I had some really strong sprint finishes there with Dorian and, Lecor and even Berger. And I was not sure what I had left in my legs. I was kind of wobbling a little bit on those last laps. My legs were getting really tired. But I just believed in it and tried to position myself well for the last, for the last K. But just on that last corner, I think it was Leo and Lecor just squished me in, and I got behind in the last corner. And then it was really just, when you get into that zone where you stop feeling the legs and you kind of just, you just see your arms moving, see your legs, and it feels like you're in the clouds or something, looking at yourself from above. And luckily, I got that last extra energy to pass them and get the second place.
Yeah, you've had a good season so far. A lot of sprint finishes, put yourself in good position. The swim, you were a little ways back, but you guys were able to bridge up.
Yeah, actually, I was expecting a much better swim. I came in here, I would say, with my best shape or my best of the three at the moment would be my swim, as I'm performing on training. But I tried to try to go with a little bit of a different tactic. The advantage of having a good start number is that you can choose your spot. I would usually always go to the sides to get less people around me. But because of the current here, the middle, you get more help. So I was like, okay, let's try this, go in the middle. But I really got smashed, and it was really complicated to get a good swim at the start. And I got, I got left behind and tried to slowly move forward, but also cutting back on the way back, like the whole group goes right. I tried to go in the middle to catch back up, but also then I got more current on me, so it didn't really work. On the second lap, I cut up a few places, but I just knew on the bike I'm going to have to work really hard to catch back up. And luckily, with the help of Christian, Hayden, Jelle, and also, Brandon also, training buddy. Yeah, we got back there, and then it was all about getting a good position into transition, because I knew that run was going to be very intensive, just the way it was.
Yeah. What do you got next?
Yeah, next, just a very good block of training, I'm hoping, to get in as good of a shape as I can to Pontevedra, because at the moment I think looks like the season could be a very good one for me in the World Series. I mean, I'm not sure if I'm second, third, or first at the moment, but I definitely want to fight for that world champion position, and if not that, staying in the podium would help me a lot for the Olympic qualification. And I've never been in Hamburg 2020 I got second at world champs, but it was a one-day race. But I've never been so consistent like I've been this year on the World Series, and looking forward to finish off the season with a good race for sure. Good.
We're looking forward to it. Thank you
so much.
Dorian, top Frenchman today, how was the race?
The race was super tough. So it was until the end, we were a lot for the sprint finish. So yeah, it was hard until the very end, and I'm really happy to get this podium.
You haven't raced a whole lot this year. You have a race since, was it Cagliari?
Yeah, exactly. I raced the French Grand Prix just to keep in shape. Yep. But yeah, it was a long time without racing World Series. A bit frustrating to see all these races and not racing. But at the end, I'm happy with my choice because it paid today. So
yeah, paid
yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Nice. So put you in good position for the Olympics for next year.
Yeah, exactly. It's like an option. I have to do something next year, like at the beginning of the year, but it's still something. So that was the goal. And yeah, so yeah, I will be a bit more comfortable now. And that's good.
Good. You can hear all the French people are screaming your name. So excited for you. What's next?
Yeah, it's super nice. It was nice during running. Next will be the one French Grand Prix for my team, Poissy Triathlon, and then Pontevedra, the Grand Final.
Yeah. Nice. We're excited to follow you, and congratulations today.
Thank you so much.
Interview real quick. Yeah. All right. Here with Morgan Pearson at the finish at Paris. Rolled onto the start list.
Yeah.
Rolled into Olympic slot.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't say I rolled into the Olympic spot. I think I worked pretty hard for that, but... Yeah, it was. I got it done. I got six, but auto qualify. Yeah, good job, man.
Good job with that, Tyler.
Yeah.
How was the swim? You had a great swim. Put yourself in good position. Got on the back of the bike.
Well, I had no idea where I was on the swim, but these gaps kept opening, and it's like I can go pretty hard, close the gap, and then I got out, flew on T1 like I always do. That's my my best discipline right there. And then it was Casper Storns and I just. Working hard together. That guy's a beast on the bike. We caught the first group on the bike, and we're with, I don't know, three laps, and then it came. I figured it'd come together, but you don't sit up and let that group go. And yeah, the run was not my best, but I pushed through, and I kept like I went out hard, feeling really good, but my like I had some back pain and stuff I've been dealing with all season, but. I just was like, if I run like a little bit slower, it doesn't bother me as much. And I just, so I was able to run that pace and get the group down to six, well, seven, five with Alex up the way. And then, I mean, they start kicking and I was just like, I just wanted to take, like, I just took in the moment. I mean, maybe I'll regret that in a couple days, but I just was like, I'm going to my second Olympics. I rolled onto the start list. It changes a lot of things about this the way this year's gone, and
did you do it?
Yeah, I got six, bro.
Let's go.
And
come on.
Yeah, now I can be a little more selective in my fall racing. I'm still gonna race hard and try to get my points back, but just things will be a little bit smoother now.
You didn't play the politic game. Clearly the federation didn't sub you in, so you didn't have a chance this weekend to even compete when you knew you were fit. How does it feel that Matt Hauser dropped off the start list and you were able to show Team USA that you're here for a slot?
Yeah, I mean, I feel bad for Matt. I mean, I think that guy will be at the Olympics. Hopefully their federation gets the knowledge he needs to compete well. So hopefully in a year's time, he won't be like bummed he missed the race. Maybe I got a GoPro footage. I wasn't going to share with anyone, but maybe I'll share it with him.
Nice. Congrats, man.
Okay, Christian Blumenfeld. Good race today. Are you happy with it?
It was all right, I guess. Poor swim. I don't know how. I guess I was maybe too much in the middle on the way back. I don't know. It was difficult to see where we were in the river because of the sun came up. So I think like a minute down, but still managed to come easily, or we managed to bridge up quite nicely together. The group was working well. Realized quite early in the first lap that I tilted my saddle a bit too much down yesterday, but I guess I didn't make any difference. But I just were like aware, okay, I have to bring it back a little bit up. On the run, a little bit slowly transition, but then thought that I could go after Alex. Then he was kicking just a bit too strong, and now I didn't have what I had to take go with him. Tried to settle in for a podium, but then. Felt that sort of was sort of on and off, and suddenly had like 2 minute gap, and then had to bridge up again, a 2 minute gap. So I was probably on the limit there for the whole run, and yeah, like a minute down, I think ninth. It's all right. It's not fantastic, but I didn't win the test event in Tokyo either, so not too bad necessarily.
And then you're heading straight to the airport, going to race the Asian Open in Singapore. Are you excited about that race now?
Yeah, it should be fun. Did some finer adjustments on the bike yesterday to see if I can avoid some cramps. So we will see on Sunday whether I can come off the bike without cramping or not. But it was okay. But I guess if I want to stay with Jason West on the run, I have to go the same pace as I did now for 10K, just do it for 18K.
You are a year out from the Olympics. Do you still believe you can win the gold medal?
Yeah, so like this year I've been balancing a little bit with different distances, and I think I just have to be much more brutal in what I'm prioritizing next year or the next 11 months. Like the results in the races I've done, I've been okay. Like I was further up there in Hamburg. I guess I was sort of more dialed into Hamburg than what I was coming in here, simply because of US Open 2 weeks ago. So it's a balance with all the races this year. But I think, it's about doing the job that's going to put me in a position to fight for the win. And I feel we're sort of back on track. And then we just have to sort of say no to quite a lot of stuff.
Final question. Can you tell us it hurts more to lose in Japanese?
Ah, makiru ga tsurai.